And I met him for the first time tonight, and I'm sure his story is going to be a riot. He told me he was going to sing the first part, dance the second part, and if anybody was still here, then they're crazier than he is. So we have
You notice I don't have a huggy? Me and Buddy don't have one. I asked for one, they just tore off my neck. And then I got this speaker so it can remind me why I'm here. I don't know why the reason why they would give it to me. I guess a little bit of senility. You got to wear this. Okay, well, my name is Obi, and I'm an alcoholic. And if someone said to me before March 2nd, 1974, went to my first AA meeting, just walked up to me in a bar and said to me, you need to go to AA because 29 years from now, you're going to be in Douglasville, Georgia. And I would question that after another scotch and say, why would I be in Douglasville, Georgia? Well, you're going to be in AA. No shit. What the hell would I be doing in AA? Well, sharing your experience, strength, and hope with others. I said, Jesus, I haven't puked in a week. What? I would have walked away. Even if I was told that in AA, I would have laughed and walked away, went to the nearest bar, and laughed like hell and drank. I went to Alcoholics Anonymous March 2nd, 1974. I'm going to try to fill you in, because we're trying to, in New York, we're told to share our experience, strength, and hope. And I've been trying to do that for 29 years. I miss it every time. You know, so I do the best shot I can. That's all to it. You know, I got a little damage between my ears, and I don't care or know the extent of it, but there are times you notice I just look off into space and say to myself, what the hell am I doing in Douglasville? What's that? Still eludes me, except when I see Buddy. It makes sense to me. But anyway, I'll let you kind of fill you in with showed up in AA March 2nd, 1974. Born and raised in New York, I was the kind of kid, very extremely passive. I'm not that way anymore because of sobriety, but because I went from passive to aggressive. I didn't have no time for assertiveness. I just, whoosh, right by it. And I didn't think I was in the right family. I used to always look at my father because he worked, you know, in the building trade. And he was Irish right off the boat. And my mother was Polish right off the boat. And they talk Polish. And I'm going, well, this is New York. You're supposed to talk English, I think, in this country, you know. And I just felt out of place. I just felt out of place with that family. Okay, just didn't have the things to give me that I wanted. And if you asked me at the time what I wanted, I had no idea. But it wasn't that damn family. I didn't fit in with this crowd. Matter of fact, I was so passive before my first drink that if I was in the bathroom and ran out of toilet paper, I'd be there for days. I just didn't know how to say, you know, I'm out of toilet paper. I think anybody come charging in and embarrass me and hurt my face. I just let it kind of dry up, pull my pants on. I only did this yesterday. I don't know why it's so funny to you. But anyway, I went out of my little old life, and my first drink was like, God, it was the greatest word I heard about dynamite. It changed me 100%. I wasn't looking for fights. My father was a professional fighter. My brother was a professional fighter. I didn't go to gyms for a very short time. I worked out, but I just thought I was bad. And when you think you're bad and you're not, if a strange thing happens to you in the street, you get your ass kicked a lot. And I hung around with a guy who said to me, Obi, if you're going to get your ass kicked, always fight two guys. That way you could always say they jumped you. And that made sense to me. Went in the military for 4 years during the Korean War. I had an eighth grade formal education, and for those 8 years, there wasn't nothing that I learned that would help a human being under any condition. Nothing. I just flat out learned absolutely nothing. Hung around in maintenance with the janitor. He made more sense to me than any teacher in that school. So, didn't want to learn. What I didn't know that alcoholism was working. Was already stealing from me. Made sure I didn't get educated. Beyond the question of education, you might have a little knowledge to see what's going on in your life. Well, I had no education. And alcoholism made sure I didn't have any education. The one thing I had of any town at all was a good sense of humor. That's all I had. So I announced to my family that I was going to be a comedian. My older brother took me on the side. He said to me, look, you're one funny bastard. You really are in the house. But don't go anywhere else. So get a job. Get a job like everybody else and go to work. That's all right. So I worked on the building trade. My family been a building trade in New York since the first building you ever put up. My father, grandfather's a union president. My father was. My brother Joe was a delegate. So you just had to do that. It wasn't if you liked it and mixing cement and hoist up six stories and, you know, dirty, filthy. You just had to do it because that's what is tradition. And I just didn't like that job at all. I just didn't like one word, which I looked up in the dictionary, work. That was not for me. So I kind of hung around with some guys that did some unsundry type things and all that to make a fast buck. You know, this type of stuff. Man, did oddball jobs. And my whole goal was to be an entertainer. Because outside of being what I was, I was a fantasizer. Loved to fantasize. So there are people neurotic and there are people that are psychotic. I was both. I was both. Because when I dreamed of castles in the sky, I moved in. There's the difference. And I couldn't get out. I couldn't get out of it. Somebody wake me up in the morning. I was pissed to no end. You know, I was living in this big mansion. I had a helicopter, women jumping all over me. You know, and I loved it, but yet I'd wake up, the damn alarm clock. And I'd stay pissed off all day. And I couldn't tell anybody, because how do you tell somebody you're neurotic and psychotic and you just woke up out of a wonderful dream because somebody turned the alarm off because I go in a freaking building trade and mix mud? Can't do that. As time went on, I went in the military, as I said, at the age of 17, joined the Air Force, fantasizer, and I joined the Air Force. I knew that they would give me a jet. I knew that. So I went in the military, couldn't wait to get in and get me a nice F-86, F-84, and again, you got to remember, psychotic, neurotic, or vice versa. Either way, I was both. I would dream of myself flying over Korea with the white helmet, and the flag on top of my just beautiful sunglasses on, and those tight leather gloves that the pilots wear. I stole a pair of them once off a pilot just to have them. Just love them. And I'd be flying around just doing whatever I have to do, killing jets, knocking down Koreans. Finally, the Korean War would be over because of me. And they would take me up Fifth Avenue, New York. I would be Brigadier General, I think is one star, one or two. Whatever they are, that's what I was going to be. Ribbons, Congressional Medal of Honor. And every bastard, especially Catholic nuns, that put me down and kicked my ass almost every week would be going, I told me O'Brien. And I go, you're damn right. You're damn right it's me. And stick your cap in school where the sun don't shine. I'm a brigadier general. See the star? I wound up, after all the testing, I went down to Valdosta, Georgia. So Sampson Air Force Base first. And I kept saying, when are we going to Korea? They wouldn't let me guard the line New Jersey and New York. They weren't sending me to no Korea, not this guy, you know. So I says, well, what, they all these papers, you got to qualify for stuff. They finally set me down, and I knew. Here it comes, man, my jet. And they said, well, you know what you qualify? Yes, what? I'll do anything. Permanent KP. Jesus Christ. I did this for my mother. Washing dishes and mopping floors and scrubbing the old scrub thing. permanent KP. So I was in the food service squad, 3550 food service squadron, Valdez to Georgia, Moody Air Force Base. During the Korean War, I got pots and pans. I'm going, Jesus Christ. Where's my jet? So I used to ride home. I was so embarrassed. So I used to ride home, 3550th FSS. I can't tell you what that means. Korean War, fighting, I can't let out, but it's big time, FSM. Every time I went home, I had to destroy. I didn't worry about it. A guy said to me, what was your MOS? I said, I have no idea. When I won the stride, I put them on. Period. That's what I did. Cared less. I want to be a sergeant. I put three stripes on. What the hell was the big deal? Long as I didn't do it at Moody Air Force Base. I sewed my Eisenhower jacket, carried it home, put that jacket on. I was a sergeant. What the hell was the big deal? Fantasy. Always wanted to be over there when I was here. I never liked the spot I was in. So I drank myself to the military. My pattern was simple. 4 long years, get paid, be told to get a haircut, because I liked to wear longer hair. Go get a haircut, go over, get a haircut, pissed off because they made me do it. Every month, every single month, I heard the same shit. Get a haircut. Yeah. Go to town, money gone. And it was tradition, get my ass kicked, go to jail in Valdosta, Georgia. And if you know anything about the jails, I'll tell you about them there. You had the bullpen or these little ovens they pulled out. The ovens, and you had to crawl in to sleep. Because they argued and fight all night, screaming, I'll kick your ass, so I'll kick yours. And Jesus Christ, you know. And the guy say, don't go in the oven. Don't go in there. Don't go to sleep in there. You'll come out head to toe bed bug bites. I'm telling you. And I says, better listen to all this bullshit. You know. And I went in and I crawled in and they ate me out of fight my life. I couldn't get the thing open. It's like little oven drawers. And I come out. I'll give you an idea how bad the bed bugs were and how your body would swell up. I used to have a very little nose. And just from bed bug bites, look at the size of it today. But what do you, that's the price you pay for drinking. Get out of military 1956, had a wife, maybe a hostage. And again, my dream of being an entertainer. I couldn't get out of my head, didn't want to get out of my head. One thing I did have is perseverance. I was going to succeed no matter what cost. And through the grace of God, that's what I say about this program. I've looked back at my life. God's allowed me, as nuts as I was, to do everything I wanted. I ain't got a kickback about God. Everything I wanted to do, it was right. Go ahead, do it. Go ahead, Ope. Go ahead. Make an asshole out of yourself. Go for it. So I have no complaints. I'll never piss and moan about my career in drinking because I was allowed to do every crazy, insane, ridiculous shit a human being could do. And I was allowed to do it without dying. No matter how many guns I put in my mouth, how many suicide attempts. If you want, I'll give money to the club, $2 or $3. You want to count the scars on my arms from suicide attempts. I never even thought it was suicide. Cared damn less. Because the problem was, I don't know what day or when, what part of my drinking, that I lost my soul. Once I lost my soul, I didn't give a shit about nobody, no place, no thing. I will apologize when I'm done here for my profanity, because there are women in the room and you should be treated with respect and dignity, and I'll do that. But until I'm finished cursing, you're just going to have to roll with it, see, until I'm done. But I will deeply apologize to every woman in the room, and men that don't like it. Hey, you know, I don't like it, but I just love using curse words. You know, you get used to it. A good F really goes a long way. Depending on the motivation behind it. That's another thing I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. I could come up here, I've been doing it for a number of years since I've been in this program, and speak and make a total asshole out of myself, right up here. There's somebody already sitting out there going, what an asshole that guy is. But you always walk away saying, some bitch does it with enthusiasm. And that's what makes the difference. In New York, we're told, when you go speak, dress up, look good, take a bath, shave, look clean, look sharp. So if you tell a shitty story, somebody can say, did you see the jacket that guy? Yeah, hell of a nice jacket, didn't he? And then you're gone. Slowly but surely, alcohol is closing the gates on me. I was not aware of it, because that's the way it works. Make sure you don't know as you're destroying your life and everything around you. And I got my wish. Got into show business, worked real hard, and had a lot of wonderful things happen to me. But it was slowly closing on me. And I tell you, I wore myself out fighting this world. I practically, well, it did, almost killed myself with suicide attempts just to fit out there in the human race. I had no idea because I didn't fit. I just couldn't fit. I was an entertainer. I'd be on stage with a tuxedo on, and I always looked down because I always felt I was the guy in a wedding party with white socks. Not the worst thing in the world to be a pitcher in a tuxedo wearing white socks. And I always looked down to see if I was wearing white socks because I was out of place. I worked in the Catskill Mountains in New York, which back in those days, it was about 99.3% of not only Jewish people, and I ain't putting Jewish people down at all. Is anybody Jewish here? Okay, I'll tell you about Jewish people. Oh, I was only kidding. So, the bottom line was, it was tough for a Gentile comedian. Matter of fact, the first bungalow colony ever worked, and that's how I was introduced. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a Gentile comedian. They have sense of humor too. I went, what the hell is this shit, you know? But that clicked, so I became a Gentile. Immediately, and I did okay the first time, and then my act consists of that, telling the difference between being Jewish, of the Jewish faith, and a Catholic. You know, from every extreme, from sexual body parts to you name it, and it was neat. I filled the need in the Catskill Mountains, but there's certain things come along with an entertainer. It's just delightful. Free booze, all the time, not once in a while, all the time. Free drugs. All the time, and free women. Some of the times. But to me, it was all the time. Because I just had to think about it, and I was in an orgy in about 30 seconds, so I fantasized more about my sex page than I ever did it. But my fantasy sometimes was better than reality. That's how screwed up I was. You know, like my thing, I didn't get a huggy thing. You know, but I already imagined that I would have a little 100 little threads on mine. You ain't got shit. But that's how my mind is. Accumulated 3 children. My whole life had to be in the clubs. I knew no other way to live. My wife had family reunions. We had family picnics. I was never there. Never there. Christmas, New Year's, alcoholism. Is that money? I see, I thought you were passing money. I went, whoa! I hope, because of being psychotic and all, I hope I don't try to hang myself. So rip it off my neck if you see me trying to do that, okay? All right. I'm a huggy. No, my wife, see, I will never be a huggy. I'll hug all the men. But be careful how close you get to me. Right, John? Make it long. I got to shorten it up here. It's getting to that time, I think. I was losing part of everything. I never, it's like sex suicide. If you never think about it, you don't do it. I never had an interest in sex. But then in my time, the girls were built like guys. So you didn't go, wow, she's going to that everybody was straight. They had the little piggy tails, and there were guys that looked better than girls in my day, I think. You know, so you didn't get too much involved in that. But until I thought about it, until I was able to put sex on my mind, I couldn't get rid of it. I just could not get rid of it. I watched two dogs doing it once. I went, I never messed with a dog. A duck? So then became a sex fiend instantaneously. Only because I thought about it. If I didn't think about it, I'd be a virgin today. Mentally ill, but I'd be a virgin. This would have probably turned me on, put on my neck. We're hot on that one. I became a stranger in my home. I wasn't a father. I had a very simple philosophy. Let me have materialistic attributes, then I'll take care of the spiritual shit later down the road. And guys always say it to me, Obi, you need to get some spirituality going. I said, let me gain materialistic things in my life, then we'll talk the spiritual crap, if you don't mind. And that's why I was so, somewhere along the line in my days of drinking, I lost my soul. I became worthless to myself, my family, my kids. It was getting to the point where I wasn't very hireable on jobs. I was very disrespectful, believe this or not, in the Catskills of my days, the word shit, you're in trouble. You had to be very cautious with your mouth, unless you worked in the lounges. The lounge, you could get away with a little bit type thing, you know? So that's why I worked. I never worked in a big room. I never became a superstar in any shape, form, or fashion, because I liked to work those little rooms. And that's as far as I ever got. When I used to ask the owners, can you move me up to the big room, they'd laugh and go, why? And I go, okay, and I just stick to what I was doing. So everything was, what was happening to me, I didn't realize it, that my life was coming to a close, and I didn't know this. I had no God in my life. The words serenity, sobriety, trust, honesty were just right over my head. They were not words I used. And I was getting, I got to the point in the 70s, after I got drummed out of show business, I sat on a Sunday in a park in Yonkers, New York, and I was unemployed. I was not working no more. I knew nothing else to do. And too egotistical and self-centered to tell people I needed help. I just wouldn't do it. I wore a white suit during the summertime on stage. I was real, you know. If you, with the lights down now, you'd say this somebody looks like Elvis Presley. You would. I was a good-looking guy with the lighting effects and everybody half drunk, smoking dope. I looked good to everybody. And I remember a guy told me if you drink mineral oil, it'll line your stomach. And you could drink all you want because I was starting to forget a lot on stage. I was starting doing not a very good job. And it ain't the owners that rat you out of doing it. It's the waitresses, the waiters, and the bartenders. They work for the hotel, and they report. So long as you keep them happy, grease them, give them a few bucks, you do okay. Well, I couldn't give any more few bucks to anybody. I needed to be down and get my hands on to keep my life moving along. And I remember a guy told me this, he says, Obi, you can't be drunk on stage, man. You can't do it. You're saying things. Doing the one-eared elephant. Anybody see a one-eared elephant? You all know about that? Okay, I'm not going to do it, but I'll explain it to you. Because I know I'd be out of here quickly if I actually did it. And I'm too much of a gentleman to do a one-eared elephant. A guy showed it to me once. I thought it was hilarious. I said, that's the funniest thing. I'm going to go on stage. Guys, don't do that on stage. I'm telling you, people know they're adults. And what it is, you ask the audience, you ever seen a one-eared elephant? And people go, no. So you do this, and you take your penis out. I thought, see, it's funny. I thought it was hilarious. But I thought I did it in a church because everybody just went. And I said to myself, I'm in deep shit. And there was the guy, when I went to the bar, he said, I told you not to do that, Obi. That's how I was getting. So back to the mineral oil. So I says, I'm going to try that. So he's telling me, if you're not a heavy, he said he drinks a half a shot of mineral oil. I mean, this guy was no place near the drinker I was, so I said, I better drink like two shot glasses. So I did. Yeah. No big deal. Went down fine, and so far it was working. And on stage, I walked a lot. Go down this end. See if I get somebody laugh down here. If you weren't, I'd run down this end. See if I get somebody letting him laugh. I would work on him all night until he peed himself. And I feel between my cheeks. Kind of oily. I go, what the hell? And I look down on the stage, and I see these drops. I look like somebody stepped on M&M's. Liquid M&M's. So what the hell is this? It was the mineral in the back of my suit. When I went off stage, a guy said, holy shit, man, look at the back. With a stain like this. And I guess we're moving around, it was like a smiley face in it. Coming home when I was worn out, exhausted, lie like hell. I made more stories up. I even come home one time. This is how bad I got. And we had a family reunion. Everybody was there. I wasn't. Got home 6-7 o'clock. I don't know what time it was. Got home and she was at the door, standing in the doorway. And I said, I better come up with a biggie, man, because shit gonna work. And I looked her dead in the eye and I said, you ain't gonna believe this. And she says, try me. I said, I was kidnapped. She just slammed the door. And I stood out here. I said, she ain't going to fall for that one. And eventually, I wore her out. It was 18 years. And she finally just packed up and left me. I was shocked. And I'm going to tell you how wonderful we are, how we manipulate people. I called my father. My father called me the wino in the family. One of my brothers is a sleeping caballero. My other brother, who's a fighter, he was punch drunk. I was the wino in the family. He had a nickname for everybody. So I go, Pop, hello, wino, what's going on? I don't drink wine, Pop, I drink scotch. My wife left me. My God, how could a woman, and he made a speech, I'm going, he's blaming her. I'll be right up. I'll be at this weekend. Got them boom bullet. Holy, hung up. God, thank you. Hung up the phone. He come up. Little short, little tough Irishman. I'm telling you, she left me. And my sons, take my word for this, were all over 6 foot tall at the time. And I said, I didn't mind her leaving, but leave me with the children. That's what pissed me off. You know, not the times I chased her around with a knife had nothing to do with it. Running from me like I'm throwing furniture at her, catching me with other women, and I'm going, part that pissing me off, she left me with the kids. How much do you need? And I'll never forget the figure to this very day, $843.32, Pop, that my monthly bills, that's right. Well, I'll give you an extra dollar, and gave me the whole thing. I said, Jesus Christ. It was when he stayed over and talked to me all night, and I'm shocked. I was embarrassed at things he was saying about her, because none of it was true. Not a word, because she was a wife all the way. She was a good mother, took care of the house. Anytime anybody come over our house, they'd say, how's the kids? And she had four of them are doing wonderful. And the baby, Obie's in the other room. Because I was a kid. I was treated like a kid by her. Anyway, that's the end of that. My brother Joe, who all my fear, was my older brother. Because I'm going to tell you, he was a kick-ass type guy. He always told me what an asshole I was. And he told me more than once, you abuse her one more time, I'm taking you down. Do you understand? I go, you got it, Joe. Taking me down means you're going to hurt me. Yeah, I'm going to hurt you. So I called him. Yeah, I talked to Pop. What the hell is going on? She left me. I'm here with the children. Up he comes on a Sunday. Unbelievable how we are. Just unbelievable How much you need? Now I'm thinking, what if he took my old man about the money? You know, I said, well, $843. Lay the money right out. But no argument, no nothing. I'm just going, maybe they're smoking dope, my family. Don't they got eyes to see what the hell is going on in his family? I mean, it was constant phone calls of what a jerk I was. Down to my sister, but she was the easy one. See, my sister, man, she hated every sister-in-law she had. A bunch of bastards. They're ruining my brothers. I go, yeah, you're right. Drive me to drink. She come up, the same thing. Joey gave you $843. I says, and 32 cents. Boom, boom, the money. No help, no offer in any shape or form. But that was the start of my downfall, of me hitting the bottom. Because now I had to do things I had never done in my life. So that was 1972. So I was, I guess, 35 years old. Give and take a few years, whatever the hell it was. Now I had to do things I've never done. Pay the bills. No idea. I had no idea. Well, how to pay a freaking bill. I've never paid a bill in my life. Get a checking account. Where do you go for a checking account? I never knew you'd go to a bank. I don't know, where the heck do they send them through the mail? How do you put the money in the bank? And so I would go out and get drunk every time thinking of this shit. Then I devised a plan. Thank God for plastic trash bags. I used to polish all the bills up on the kitchen table till Sunday. And Sunday, I'd open. I had a brand new letter opener. Do a scotch on the side there. Open one up. Sip it. $200-some-odd. Okay. Take a stamp. Into the trash. Okay? Car payment. Got to pay the car payment. Got to pay the car. Lights and gas. Everything else. All the credit cards. Screw them. I put them right in the... Just stamp. Paid. My brother asked me, how you doing financially? Great. The trash bag took care of everything. And all that eventually caught up to me. Then, like sex, I start thinking suicide. Couldn't get it off my mind. So, guns in my mouth, guns in my ear, cut my wrist, over the sink, had enough drinks in me, if you popped a few pills. Just sit there bleeding. And the phone rang. Wonder who that is. Could be a loan shark. Could be a bookie. I might have hit the number. I take, hello, Obie. Hey, I'm so, yeah. You want to go to Playboy Club? Yeah, I'll be with you. I just got to tape things up here. Right up to the Playboy. Downhill. One of my sons summed it up the best. He was talking to somebody in a program. My youngest son got 3 years. My oldest son's got 27 years in the program. So I cannot relapse. I got another son that's a week here, a week there, maybe a week, maybe a day, not too sure. But he's hanging in there. And I couldn't have these people around me 12-7. I'd blow my brains out. I swear to God, I'd have my sons come and get me. And he said it the very best. He said it in our house. And I don't remember this now. He's in our house. It was party, party, party. And somebody said during the program, well, on the weekends, everybody parties. He said, not my house. It was from Monday all the way to the next Monday. There was always someone in our home and my father having a party for them. They were coming in from different states or whatever. The time meant nothing, 12 in the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the morning. It made nothing. It was always parties 7 days a week in our home. There's always somebody coming through. Can I stay over your house? Yeah, come on, shit. A little bag of dope, maybe? Bring it with you, something like that, you know? And that was always party. So it finally accumulated. I mean, not accumulated, but escalated to the point where I didn't give a shit no more. I didn't give a shit about my kids. Didn't give a shit about living. Out of my own career. Doing all I was selling insurance. Now, you name the job, I was doing it. And I didn't like none of them because that's not what I was. And I finally decided... After a final suicide, it was an unusual suicide because I went to the bathroom, left the gun on the dining room table, and went into the bathroom. Didn't remember what I did near it all. I checked myself. There's nothing in my pants. Came out, took the gun, and before I put it in my mouth, I would check to make sure it was loaded or unloaded. I always practiced. I didn't want to be a screw-up, you know, and shoot myself, and the bullet goes this way and that way, and I'm in an iron lung the rest of my life, and my father and brother coming, how many times we told you, God, Jesus Christ, as I can't cripple myself, I got to make sure I die. And I don't remember what I did in the bathroom. I sat down, picked up the rifle, it's a 22 rifle, but like a 30-30, and I had all this booze and pills there, and I cocked it just to make sure everything was cool, and this bullet went right by me, just like that. I said, I loaded this son of a bitch. This was not my plan. I always want to make sure I got things right. I was instantaneously sober. I got sober so quick when that bullet went by me. I went, holy shit. You know, I even checked the front door that maybe somebody slipped in and put the bullet in. I said, Jesus Christ. This is not the way I want to do this deal, you know. Scared the living shit out of me. Because I figured out later on, my wife, every time she'd yell at me and I come home, she's crawling into the house, she'd scream and I'd go right for the gun. Make sure it wasn't loaded. Just click it 14 times. Then I come right out of the bedroom. I've had it with you. No, please, sweetheart, don't do it. Okay, I put the gun away. After about 14 times of this, and she was not a stupid woman. She was a smart woman. Not once she said, let me see that gun. Because I would never gave it to her. There's never no bullets in it. What the hell, I'm going to kill myself? But you see, I think if you start, you play with the guns. Before you know it, you're doing it. So at that time, I was in the grocery business in upstate New York, Warwick, New York. And my butcher was a fabulous guy. He was what I strive for today, living a happy, productive lifestyle. See, he wasn't a drunk. See, he didn't have to be here, as I have to be here, to learn that stuff to deal with outside here. He was a fabulous human being. And I was on a bad drunk. I quit drinking, December of 73, I think. I quit, and come February, I was ready to rock and roll, man. I just could not. And I'm back drinking heavier than I ever drank before in my life. Ice cubes meant nothing to me. Brushing my teeth first meant shit. Everything I always said, the day I get up and drink without ice, before breakfast, before brushing my teeth, I'm in deep shit. And that's what I was doing. I cared. There had no time to reach in an ice tray. I was losing time to drink. And Bill Wendell, who was not an alcoholic, a damn superhuman being, he got a phone number of all people, a Catholic priest, who was in AA, which I said, that makes sense. Okay? Father Roman. And he came over to my house. I wouldn't go to work. I was just all my blinds down and just going to go for it until I die, kill myself, a heart attack, whatever the hell. I didn't care no more. And he came over and gave me this guy's phone number. He says, give him a call. He's AA. Excuse me? What? AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. So what the hell's that got to do with me? Now, I think you ought to talk to somebody from AA. Well, I like the guy so much as I'll give it a shot. Call Father Roman. He's never home and this and that. So finally, he called me. He says, look, there's a meeting in Warwick, New York, South Street Sobriety. Sad day. We were saddest in Sundays in those days. Come on over. It was a treatment center, Sleepy Valley. It was in Warwick, New York. He says, come on over. I said, what do you do? Well, it's going to be a speaker's meeting. Someone's going to share their experience, strength, and hope. Ooh. And it's going to be a covered dish, an eating meeting. Wow. I guess my nipple hard right away. Gee, I'm the hell over there to that AA shit. Whoa. My God, food and is sharing their experience, strength, and hope. God almighty, whatever that means. Oh, I know what I was talking about. And what's the goal? Sobriety. Wow, sobriety. I wonder if I have that in my store. What the hell are you talking about? I know what sobriety was. I had no idea. Went to the treatment center, very small town, Warwick, New York, and I had to go put a mask on. I want nobody to see me going to the freaking treatment center. And I go, and I meet a wonderful woman named Grace. She was from England. And she was about late 70s, and we sat down and talked and talked and talked. And she shared with me her experience, strength, and hope. And if one thing she says, I'm from England, you know. I said, yeah, fine, that's good. I was a prostitute. I said, excuse me, you were what? Now, I'm looking at her as she is now, 76 years old. You know, I look like someone took a prune and laid it out on the window, you know. I said, boy, there must be awful horny in England. I said, oh, shit. So I said, oh, yeah, good, yeah. And you did, well, I drank all day, don't you? Turn tricks. So I said, well, thank you very much. She says, why don't you come over? I had good insurance. I could have went to the treatment center. So maybe if the story's all over, she shares with me everything. I'm going to leave. I said, I'll let you know. I'll see what I'm going to do. I was not going to no treatment center. Yeah, no, we're not with a 76-year-old prostitute. Because I'm that kind of guy. I draw these kind of people, you know? Hi, honey. I told you, Jesus Christ. The good-looking chicks walk right by me. 70-year-old prostitute. Hi, yeah. As I'm leaving, they had a rack with all the books. Little literature books. You know, not here, but... You ever seen that? Where? Yes, very good. Excellent. Just between you and I, you're going to do great in this program. Like I needed your direction, where they were, right? You let me find them myself, see? Speaker? And there they were, very similar, sitting on a table. And she said, why don't you take one? I said, there's the gimmick. The minute I grab one, with my luck, I'm going to get the $25 one. I know it. Freaking one. And their colors, and what color should I take, and all this shit. And I says, well, no, I have a lot of that stuff home. I said, and as I went by, she says, they're free. Never turned a freebie down in my life. Oh, okay. So I took the one to so many questions. I don't remember anymore. How many questions? 44. 44, huh? Talk about quality sobriety, huh? She's going to go big time. Bet you Al-Anon, ain't you? No, you're one of us? God bless you. Al-Anon could never point that out. You're a husband?
Yeah.
Husband.
He's one of us, too.
Well, I could see that. Well, you got humility down pat. Went to my first meeting, South Street Sobriety. They told me walking. I go into the treatment center thing, got my little literature, 44 questions, as you said. And she should get a little gift when this is over or something. She's been very good. Is there people going here going, Iraq? Where the hell's Iraq? Went to my first AA meeting, South Street Sobriety, 9 o'clock at night. I walked in. It was like it was a house on the Catholic Church where a priest used to be. And now they're giving out to the Boy Scouts or whatever, and AA was there, and I didn't know. The only thing I knew about AA was reading an article once about the actor, Diana Andrews, in the Inquirer. That was my favorite newspaper at the time. And it said, AA's favorite son fell off the wagon. I said, oh, dear, Jesus Christ. Who would put that in a favorite son? AA's? I didn't know they had children. Anyway, there I go to this meeting. And I sit there, and I yell in the room, because I walked in, it was a kitchen first, and I hear laughter. That was the first sound I ever heard or voice of any kind in AA, was laughter. And that really settled me down. That moment I heard laughter, because I was visioning AA. You know, I can't walk the coals with a whip. God, goddamn it. You know, oh, Jesus Christ. And I would have loved it. I would have loved that. They didn't do that, though. That's what I was waiting for, a whip, and someone's going to kick the shit out of me with a nail and a war. You bastard, you bitch. Your wife told us about you. And you got to put a buck in the basket, buddy. We ain't beating you up for shit, you know. I heard laughter, and I just settled down instantaneously. I walked in the room. Now, remember, it's a little hick town. I walked in the room and I said, excuse me, is this AA? And they start laughing their asses off. And then one guy jumps up. He says, "We've been waiting on you." I'm a paranoid son of a bitch at this time. Waiting on me? Yeah, come on, man. We've been waiting on. He's shaking my hand. I'm going to grab my wallet. I'm going, Christ almighty. There were six guys in that room that are very dear to me today, every one of them. Some are gone, but they're still around, a few of them. And I just start looking around. I wasn't with the meeting. I was in this, we called New York a mocust state of mind, which means you're moving faster than a racehorse. No matter what the hell you do, you pee faster, you leave a lot of stains in your clothes, but ain't the point. You have to get back out to the bar. You hold your pee in. I did, because you might miss the action. You go to back, you come back. You didn't see what happened? Jesus, the place was robbed. He got knifed. You go, damn it. I missed all that shit. Stay till the bar closes. Very important in New York. That's that last minute or two when shit hits the fan. And you go, wow, I was there. Yeah, put the gun right in my ear, the guy. Holy shit. I almost got an erection. I didn't really grasp what was going on, but I was looking around, just like this here, preamble, 12 steps. No preamble hanging around here, is there? Oh, thank God, I thought I was saying things. All the slogans, think. I jumped on that right away. And I looked at that, I went, I guess the guy stuttered. Why would somebody write that? Think, right? Just think once is enough for me. But it wound up being one of my best slogans. Think things through. I never thought nothing true in my life. Alcohol distorted what I thought about things, what I felt about things. I was worried when I should never been worried in my life. I was shitting in my pants when I shouldn't have been. I should have been peeing in my pants instead. I didn't know that. I didn't know I was an alcoholic that couldn't deal with nothing. With nothing. That I was not in control of nothing at any time. That's why I was never really shook up when I had a bowel movement. When I used to drink, what the hell was that? Jesus, it was 29 cents a 50-gallon drum. Golden something or other. It's golden horseshoe. I mean, you wash your car with this shit. Your motor, it's like gunk. But for 29 cents, you get this big freaking jug. You could drink it and have diarrhea at the same time. It cleansed you. Well, after the meeting was over, I sat with these guys and I said, I don't know what to do. I said, you think I'm an alcoholic? Do you think I'm an alcoholic? They go, not me. Do you think I have a problem on alcohol? No. I said, let me say it again. Do you think I have a problem with alcohol? Hell no. I said, see, I tell my family that. I'm glad I came to talk to you guys, because now I found out that I don't have a problem with alcohol. I said, hell no. You love that shit. Never thought of that. I said, well, that's a good point. Everybody, see, that's what held me back from going to AA probably 10 years sooner. Everybody kept telling me I have a problem with alcohol. That was mother's milk to me. To have a problem, I could throw up and light a cigarette at the same freaking time. I loved alcohol. Cared less. When I threw up the first time in my life, I did it with class. All over me. Peas and carrots and little chunks of meat. The peas showed up on brown clothes. The meat blended. I didn't give a shit. All right, so to make a long story short, they said to me, I said, well, what do I do? What about a treatment center? Well, you go to treatment center. I got right here in Warwick, Sleepy Valley. That was the name of the place. I said, they come in my grocery store wearing their little paper shoes. And in treatment centers, they always got to have a leader. It was a staff member. Come on now. Go down and buy some peanuts. Come on, get the hell out of here. I'm going to walk around somebody leading me around. I'm not doing nothing like that, because if you got to do that, that's an admission of something. I'm going to have to admit I'm an alcoholic. Where can I go? I'm going to my store? Hi, how's staff? I'm going to get some peanuts. Paper shoes. No. I wouldn't buy that at all. I ain't going to no treatment center. As a matter of fact, my family got that much thought that I was somewhere under lock and key, I'd be still there to this day. My family would have got together and said, keep that guy, don't let him out. He's a psycho, he's psychotic. Do not let that man, I said, I ain't going to those kind of places. I just can't. This will 90 meetings in 90 days. How do you do that? We'll come and get you. You know, come over your house. Oh, really? Let me think about that. And I said, right away, my mind, I'm going, what happens if they rob me? I mean, they could come over my house. You know, then they rob me. What do I call the cops? Yeah, Don C. and Billy D. and two other bastards, so I don't even know what their names were. Where did you meet them, Mr. O'Brien? Oh, yeah, So I says, no, I'll be all right, because they wanted to get the gun out of my house, and this, I'll take care of the gun and all that. So they said, we'll pick you up tomorrow, period, end of story. So they start showing, that's what, without me being 12-step that way, there'd be no way I'd be standing here today. I needed to be nurtured. I was out for lunch. So it took me to four meetings in a row, 90 and 90, but my fourth meeting, I hear guys during the New York a break between the meeting, like a half hour is a 10-minute break for cigarette, coffee, and you get back and finish the meeting. I hear guys talking. Well, I got 44 meetings in. I only got so many to go. I'm going, I got 44, and that's 90. Another guy says to me, I got four more meetings to go, and I'll have 90 and 90 in. I says, good God almighty. I've got 86 more of these freaking things to go. Holy shit. There ain't no way I'm going to 86 more of these freaking meetings. Easy does it. First things first. But for the grace of God, surprise, the way to go. Let's do the serenity prayer now. I said, Our Father. I said, holy shit. I says, there is no way. These people are nuts. Don't they know how to say, just once in a while, hey, fuck it. Nothing. I apologize for that. But if you notice, when I said fuck, it was in a Christian sort of way. Did you pick that up? Well, I got my 90 and 90 in. What time do you want me to shut it down? Just tell me. I do it immediately. You want to go for coffee and come back? I can go Tuesday. I'm going to tell you right now. I'm on a freaking roll right now. I'll wind it down. Got my 90 and 90 in. Same guys all the time picking me up, riding in the car, telling drunk stories. I'm going, Jesus Christ, how could these guys be so open about this? And in New York, they trick you horribly. If I knew what they were going to do to me, I never would have went. Never would have went. Go to the meeting, listen to preamble. Well, they just did the preamble. That's all they're doing. Get into the meeting. Get sharing. You know. Hurry up. Get this thing on the road. Oh, Jesus Christ, I can't take this. I said, maybe I'll open my eyes one day. I won't be here. You know? And it was really, really getting me right here. The 90 and 90, I finally get it in. It's over. To the grace of God, I'm happy as shit. This, well, I'm the business meeting. I don't know what it is. I don't have to go to a business. What I have to go to a business meeting for? But I wasn't driving. Because every time he went to a meeting in New York, you think you're going home when the meeting's over. Meeting's at 9, 10 o'clock. Then they got to introduce you to every person in the group. If it's 60 or 160, oh, this is over. This is Gene. Yeah, I'm trying to hide. Yeah, fine. Yeah, sure. People I know, holy shit, I know that guy. Yeah, let me go over there. Yeah. I says, everybody's going to know me. And I'm not even in yet. I ain't buying this shit. I'm no alcoholic, psychotic. Yes, no question about it. You know, but not an alcoholic. Good Christ almighty. Well, are you in? Yep. Well, say it. Holy shit. These people can't hear well. I'm in. For the guy in the back room. Don't want you to say it. I said, these freaking people are nuts. I said it three times quite out loud. I mean, say you're an alcoholic. God almighty. Pain in my chest. And I got false teeth. And they start clicking in my mind. I go, oh, oh, oh. I go, come on, say it. Haka haka hicka. Waka haka maka haka. That's close enough. You're in. Now we'll have a business meeting. All right, vote chairperson. Yeah, you got to help me sign me. Okay, I'm standing there. All right, we need somebody to be a greeter at the door. Vote, go for it. What, me? Nobody knows me here. Go for it. I'm telling you, you'll win. Embarrassed. Embarrassed. I'll kick the shit out of this guy if I don't win this damn thing. Carte blanche. Everybody. What? Fucking popularity. I can't believe this shit. I won an election. First time in my whole life. I'm at the door. Shaking hands. Welcome. Welcome to South Street Sobriety. Welcome to South Street Sobriety. Guy goes right by me. Who's this punk? So I go to the guys. I say, hey, this guy walked by me. Can I kick his ass? Who the hell is he not to shake my hand? Well, maybe he didn't see you. Maybe he was talking to somebody. Ain't the point. I'm the greeter. I don't give a shit if he didn't see me. Maybe he's not a member. They shouldn't be in here then. Throw him the hell out. That's why you're there, to deal with your insecurities. And I just, the guys, didn't shave me. Don't worry about it. Son of a bitch. And next thing, hey, yeah, and 90 days. Everything's 90 days where I come from. Any job you take, it's 90. I'm finished being agreed in 90 days. Hey, we're having a meeting. Elections. Whatever. Okay. How about we need an assistant coffee maker. And that guy does all the dirty work for the coffee maker. He picks up the chairs, he sweeps the floor, he does all the filth. And then he moves to coffee maker. Nobody explained that process to me. Anybody here for assistant coffee maker? Come on, raise your hand, be part of the program. Guy, same guy. Go for it. I won one. I didn't get my hand, maybe like this. Hey, you want it? Yeah. Holy shit. Two in a row. Jesus. God almighty. They see greatness, this group. To the first day, and the coffee guy said to me when the meeting was over, pick all the chairs up to go in those racks over there, get the big sweeping thing, go right around, sweep it off, then you light mop it. That's why I'm wearing Pierre Cardin shoes, boots. You want me to mop this freaking floor? And I'm beating that big broom thing around, and the dust, I says, I don't think so. I walked right outside. And a wonderful guy was a dear friend of mine to our left, New York, Carl Varage. He was an undercover cop in New York City. He was out there getting in his car. And he goes, how's it going? Just like, he talked just like that. How's it going? And I said, I'm telling him, I sweep the floors, I got brand new boots on, I'm off the floor, you got to do this and do that. He said, well, you don't want to do it. I says, hell no. He said, then fuck it, don't. And he got in his car and he drove away and left me standing. I'm going, what the hell does that mean? So I'm not going to do what he says. I'm going to go in there and clean. And I went and I cleaned it all up. I think if I ever went home, I would have drank. My own opinion. I said, screw him. I can't be that wacky because that's how I was thinking not to go and do it. I said, I'm going to go back. And then, make a long story short, I made coffee for 11 solid years in New York. And I'm not bragging about it. And the only reason why I made coffee for 11 years, I met a guy up in where Big Book was printed up in Cornwall, New York. And I was pissed off on my third year, always being voted in coffee maker. Man, I hate to see you go out. You make the best coffee. Yeah, when they buy, a guy, the first time I made coffee, guy took a cup, he went, who the hell made this pint of piss? And he says, it doesn't make no difference. Your sharing coffee maker is the most powerful job in AA because everybody shares with you. You don't have to say a word in AA, but they've got to drink your coffee. Especially the ones that, for whatever reasons, they don't know you, but they don't like you for something. But they got to drink your coffee. They're there with their coffee looking at you going, that son of a bitch. I wouldn't share spit with him. You're drinking your coffee. And I said, and that's what they told me. I said, you're right. How many people don't like you? How many people don't like me here? And they said, we really don't want to tell you. But there's a lot. Okay, I'll make the goddamn coffee. And you had to buy cake to go with the coffee in New York. And I would say if I didn't like David, I find out from I forgot your first name. Charles, damn, I apologize. I find out from Charles what he don't like. He don't like walnuts? Good. My next cake had walnuts on it. I didn't like Butch. What find out? But he don't like raisins. Great. Raisins in the goddamn cake. And he come, there's raisins. I go, yeah, I'm sorry about that, Butch. I got even with everybody. 2 years. 2 years in the program, didn't work the steps. Because I wasn't practicing anything. So to me, you've got to practice. But I know I worked real hard to get into AA. I paid the piper to get here. I worked real hard for the first 2 years on my own. No, anybody sitting here new, get a sponsor immediately. Because I guarantee you one thing about a sponsor. The dumbest, stupidest things I ever heard from sponsors in my life in AA was better than the best thing I ever had in my life. The best. I could think of some great shit. When a sponsor tell me something, I'd go, well, that's stupid. That was better than my best thinking. And that's why I think of sponsorship. So after 2 years of faking it and bullshit and going, suiting up and showing up, never missed a meeting. And that's the only thing I had done. I didn't do nothing else in the program. And a guy finally grabbed me, Jim Cusack, who has over 50 years sobriety today. He snatched me one day and simply asked me a question. Who's your sponsor? And I always lied. I mean, Jim B. I mean, Jim B's are in New York. Yeah, Jim B, great guy. Yeah, I did not want no sponsor. I didn't think I needed to be told what to do, directed what to do. And that alone should have told me how sick I was. I don't know about AA and the program or what sobriety. I had no idea. And he finally confronted me, and I told the truth for the first time. He said, who's your sponsor? I said, I ain't got one. Just like that, I went, holy shit. There's a little honesty there, you know. And he says, well, you're going to have one now, me. And he had 30-some odd years then. And the guy introduced me to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. He's a guy that handed me the 12 and 12 in his office. He had a treatment center at Veritas Villa in New York. And he handed me and he told me to read the second step. And I'll show you how sick I was. And I read it to him out of the book. Came to believe the power greater than ourselves restore us to sanity. He said, say it again, okay? Okay, I read you, I tell you. Can you believe the power greater than ourselves restore us to sanity? He's giving that freaking book. The book. He said, you left the word could out of it. I said, well, that's not for me. I said, I'm restored, I don't need a could. That don't make sense to me. He said, that's why it's in there for you. I'm going to close with a wonderful little story about AA. I've made it an AA story. It's the attitude that you have to be here. And what the attitude you have to have. You have a choice. Pessimistic, optimistic. There's the choice, and you stick out like that if you're pessimistic. I'm having such a hard time with the steps. I get a mind grade. So the story goes, they get 2 5- or 6-year-old kids. One's a pessimistic and one's optimistic. And in a room about the size of a normal bathroom, they have it filled with horse shit. And they give this little pessimistic a shovel, and they say, go in there and see what you can find. And he goes in there crying and beating on the door to get out. And mommy, mommy, open the door. He runs to his mother, spotless. No shit on him, nothing. Not even on the shovel. A little optimistic boy, he's standing, grabbed that shovel. He's standing by the door, ready to go. They says, well, go ahead. He charged right into the horse shit, about 6 feet deep. Charging, he's in there whistling and spitting and shoving, shit flying all over the place. They said, let's open the door, find out what. Open the door, and he's got a shit-eating grin on his face, shit all over him. And they said, son, why are you so happy? He says, because somewhere in there, there's got to be a pony.